Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the co-host of the podcast along with Rohit. And today, we are really excited to have Jonathan Bush on our podcast. He's one of healthcare's boldest and most original thinkers. And he has explored where AI, data, and business model innovation is truly going to take the industry next. So really excited to have him here. And a warm welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for listening today.
I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the CEO of Bigrio and the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast. Really honored, Jonathan, to have you on the podcast with us today. There's a lot of learning to be done here in the interaction with you. So with that, I will pass on over to you for your introduction.
Well, thank you, R squared, both of you, for having me on. I'm a little insecure that you are able to do 183 episodes with no me. I'm feeling irrelevant, as one does. Life moves on without you after a while. I'm a one-hit wonder, although maybe now two hits. We'll see. I started with my buddy Todd, Athena Health, almost 30 years ago. And Todd left elegantly with a big party 20 years ago, and I got booted 6 years ago, and then started a new company, Zeus Health, which I think is the next logical iteration of what medical records technology needs to be, a longitudinal, always-on common patient record for every American. And that's doing very well now, with about just almost 10 million Americans on it, working our way to a living, breathing graph of the whole American record. And that's it. Oh, and I'm a candidate for governor of Maine. I'm going to try to be a politician as well. So if you want to ask me about why you're not allowed to hunt on Sundays, I will go into that as well.
I will definitely ask you that question, Jonathan.
I'm ready with my answer.
Yeah, absolutely. But tell us a little bit, Jonathan, about how did you get started in healthcare? Like, what attracted you? You know, Athena Health, you said you were early on. You were the pioneers, I think, at that
time. I was one of those Bushes, you know, all of these noblesse oblige people who had good business careers and gotten into public service. And, you know, I was the youngest of that generation of cousins, or there was a few of us that were sort of left behind the main crowd now in their 70s. We're still down here in our 50s. But do well by doing good was a mantra from my grandmother, and we all followed it. And nobody in the family seemed to be in healthcare. I had one great uncle who had been a physician, but he got polio and couldn't practice. So I thought, look, I could be the best healthcare person in the Bush family because I would be the only healthcare person in the Bush family. And that got me interested. I drove an ambulance. I thought about medical school. I finally got into the idea of entrepreneurship in healthcare. It seemed like it was a very sclerotic industry, moved slowly, changed slowly for good reasons and bad reasons, and that there should be more entrepreneurship in healthcare. So we started Athena. It was called Athena Women's Health, and it was a maternity care company trying to bring midwife-centric care and to take financial risk on whole episodes of maternity care, which now bundled care is a common phrase, but at the time it didn't exist. And we ended up moving on to being the back office for doctor's offices. And Athena Health served not just women's health, but every specialty. Basically tried to figure out a way to get an industrial strength read-write internet application going in healthcare. And we really were the first one. AthenaNet, which was our system that we used to automate medical records and billing and patient communication and other things, went live for a paying customer on Y2K Day. January 1 of 2000.
Amazing.
So that was a very, you did not have regular access to the internet there. You know, we literally had an internet access department, you know, guys with work belts and wires, you know, that would go out and convert your copper phone to a DSL connection or things like that. And we therefore got the drop on the idea of putting thousands and thousands of businesses that don't know each other onto a single instance of a single application using the internet. That's now sort of made its way through. There was a big government stimulus. Almost every doctor in the country is now on some kind of electronic medical record, but the data model is wrong. It's still oriented around fee-for-service claims and not around patient care. So I believe the next opportunity, now that Athena and Epic and Cerner and Allscripts and whoever have sort of covered the front lines, changing the root chakra of the record itself, the logical architecture is the next wave. And it will be much easier than the first wave. We're not going in and training hundreds of thousands of lovely people in, you know, medical smocks, how to use a mouse, which literally we were doing when we started. This is just moving where those medical record systems point. Instead of pointing to the, you know, the famous story of the blind man and the elephant, you know, this guy thinks it's a tree and this guy thinks it's a snake and this guy thinks it's a sword. Obviously, doctors today have that. Nobody has a complete picture of the record. And so we believe the next iteration of all this will be a small number of always on, always current, probably Fire Native, we'll see, but certainly API first medical records that don't compete with whatever front-end workflows people are doing. I imagine there'll be many more of those, and the established companies there will keep adding features. But what will change is that they will all read and write off of a version of truth that is complete. And that's where Zeus has had so much success, is to find people wherever they have been. Go, and it's a little bit like taking out the trash. We go into these records, we pull out the continuity of care documents in these old systems. But then we can, thanks to AI, open them, read them, and graph them properly. Put a FHIR resource against every piece of information in the note, in the attachments, so that then webhooks, EMR systems, new products can be driven off of changes in the truth. And that is the beginning of truly automated care, truly affordable care. In fact, we were thrilled. The first like recognizable end game for that was launched at the health conference by Verily, who agreed to give free primary care to 1 million people. And they're able to drive most of that interaction off of a Zeus aggregated profile of that person's health. That's an extreme and exciting version. Most of where care is somebody's focusing exclusively on diabetes management and they're, you know, a focus factory, and all of the texting back and forth, you know, little by little can be automated and made more intimate, and connecting to rings and scales and toilets so that you can monitor someone more continuously for these chronic diseases. Those are where the most of the progress is happening. But you do have these few examples of something that really recognizes itself as completely a leap forward.
Very curious, Jonathan. This is amazing that you have, you know, now 10 million patients you mentioned on the platform, and you are able to build such a longitudinal view of the patient record, which is complete. And you said you're using AI in many different ways to kind of make it happen. So tell us a little bit more about how this interoperability works, because we know that all these systems are siloed and disparate. And how do you bring it all together, and how do you have the single source of truth? I thought it might have something to do with not cryptocurrency, but blockchain, you know, technology.
Well, I think that the word interoperability seems to be it sounds like a regulation. It sounds like something from another era. The FCC has a law that every television remote control is supposed to work with any other television. And if you, you know, press these two buttons long enough and know the code and can switch, you can make your L3 remote work on your Sony television. But it's not very easy. That you're interoperable is merely compliance.
I see.
And I think when you think about all of the ETL work, when people try to do interfaces between systems, you can't imagine that scaling to something that is truly going to be the backbone for longitudinal care. Again, it's sort of a compliance or a heroic act, a one-time fix, a hack. I think what we're getting to soon is what Zeus is counting on is more of an API-first view, where you don't have interfaces between two complete brittle stacks, front-end compute database over here, front-end compute database over here, and then somebody draws an extension cord between them. Instead, what you end up with is many, many front ends reading and writing on a very small number of back ends, who maybe then exchange with each other. You know, Visa and MasterCard and banks will exchange. You'll have many, many, many different kinds of bank machines and many, many different kinds of mobile phone banking apps and Venmos and whatever. And then a small number of platforms that are interchanging in the background. And I believe what's happening in healthcare right now is there are enough novel new front ends going on, digital first companies from COVID, given a shot in the arm by COVID and all the government money that poured out around COVID and the change in the monetary supply that happened around COVID. And so now you've got a job to do that requires not just interoperability for compliance sake, but true industrial strength at scale interoperation, the verb. And that's where Zeus has really started to soar, is when you really want to interoperate as core to your business model, not as a performance art so that the government isn't mad at you, then you get into where Zeus lives.
So to that point, I'll ask one more question and then Ritu, I'll like you to chime in as well. I'm very curious how this fits in the landscape. Can you tell us, like, vis-a-vis the EMR systems or the new technologies that are coming in, where does Zeus fit in? Who's the customer? Yeah, how does it get implemented?
So Zeus's customer,
be very curious.
Zeus's customer, I mean, really, name me a provider that wouldn't like to see the whole picture of their patient. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, every single urgent care specialist, every referral, every patient intake in America starts with a freaking clipboard like it's 1975, you know? So really everybody needs, but who makes money every day needs to really know the whole truth all the time. It's people who are in serious accountable care contracts. So a virtual first company that says, listen, my entire fees are at risk. If you let me monitor these people with this disease and be their wraparound care, I guarantee you that they will be savings that exceed what you pay me. Well, now, okay, game on. Let's do it. Well, first of all, you need to know what happens to these people so that you can live up to that guarantee. But also, you need to follow these people much more closely than the traditional American doctor who's sort of like, I'm a doctor. If you need me, you beat a path to my door. And in fact, you probably thank me for fitting you in, as opposed to if I'm at risk for your hospitalization, I'm beating a path to your door. And then I really need to know what's going on with you. If you stop taking your meds, if you take a different med, if you see a specialist that I didn't know about, if you start going to the emergency room, you know, and I didn't know why, that's an actionable, urgent moment for somebody who's in a real accountable care contract. Now, I say real because you can call yourself in accountable care, do risk adjustment, try to close some of the NCQA quality measures and just increase your revenue, but not really play the managing of care game. I believe that arbitrage is almost over. I think you still have to do risk adjustment and quality measures, but you can't just make a ton of money doing nothing but that. That's been played out. You need to actually engage in managing care, and that's when Zeus comes in.
Yeah, and managing care, I would suppose, Jonathan, would be very high touch. So how do you manage a high touch, or is it not? I mean, I'm just...
Oh, Zeus isn't high touch at all. Zeus is invisible to most people. It's Intel inside, call it. I mean, what I think most of the early players, the early winners in longitudinal care, have focused in on going at risk for somebody who's got a chronic disease. And the behavioral determinants of their health drive the cost more than any one drug or surgery or fix. And so being able to stay in touch and titrate and engage in the emotional, physical, clinical, pharmaceutical treatment of that person is important. That's very high touch, probably too high touch to justify a doctor's time full time. But maybe there's a mid-level, maybe there's a care guide, maybe there's a bot that can engage in very close-in, intimate monitoring and support and still deliver the experience as if you had your own private doctor following you around all day long. There are great companies that have emerged out of this basic idea. I just finished my physical therapy on Sword, and another time I did Vori. You know, my AI, and I have a physical therapist up there. I've met her somewhere in the cloud. She's assigning the agents on what to do. But then an AI agent is encouraging me, no, bend your back, straighten your neck, move your feet apart. That kind of coaching would cost 100, 200 a session. And now it's just a, you know, it's a freaking iPad on your kitchen table. Oh. That basic concept is available. You know, it's certainly primary care, certainly chronic disease, certainly rehab, much of the musculoskeletal world. There's enormous arbitrage in always on longitudinal care. And there is no platform. There is no industrial backbone for that care.
That's cool. And Jonathan, any insights on how the name came about?
Yeah, Athena, who's your daddy? Zeus, you know, Athena was the goddess who brought, supposedly the Greeks were able to build Athens because they didn't have to be tribal and wander through the desert anymore. They had bridles and spears and a hoe and all of these technologies that Athena gave them to be able to stay still and still survive. And of course, Athena's father was Zeus. And so our thought is, as I said earlier, all of these medical records, Athena and more, will migrate over time to a single, complete, multi-EMR version of truth that is a better source. Did you buy iTunes when they first came out, when Steve Jobs, you know, you'd buy a song and then another song?
Yep.
And all of a sudden, your friend has Spotify, which has all the songs ever sung by every artist. And you're here paying 50 cents and 50 cents. I still have 200 iTunes.
So do I.
I never use them because I have Spotify with everything. And I think, you know, every doctor has some records that they've collected over time in their EMR on their patients. It's just a small piece of the truth of the patient. And if the other side of their screen has the whole story over time, you know, maybe they move over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ritu.
Yeah, Jonathan, whatever you've said so far really resonates because I have, you know, two elderly in-laws in our family. And whenever they go for a patient visit, they carry these bags full of
their records. Yeah.
And when they reach the doctor's office, the doctor, you know, starts looking at them. And by the first file, he's already given up. And he's like, you know, I can't look through any of this. So he just makes them repeat all the tests. And
there you go.
Because it's like,
there you go.
Why are you doing this? You know, why, if somebody could see everything in one spot. So when I was reading up on Zeus, the thing which struck me the most was that it automatically updates itself with the latest information. And that would be so wonderful that the doctor gets to see the latest, you know, and sees like a complete picture. So I think it's amazing work that you're doing. And I
thank you. Thank you, Ritu. It's been a lot of fun. It's what was missing, obviously. Athena was able to federate insurance information. So, you know, when you scan your insurance card into AthenaNet, there's one single list of all the insurance cards, regardless of which practice scanned them. And so all of the rule, if one doctor gets a claim denied by a certain payer for a certain reason, Athena will build a rule into the rules. And then no doctor gets that denial ever again. There's a network effect. There is no such network effect on the core clinical record. There is no avoided second blood test in your example of your in-laws. And so it seems to me a similar architecture, a similar network effect is needed now. And that's why Athena started to, we've had a wonderful partnership with Athena. Many Athena customers are on Zeus, the ones with big risk contracts. Also 14 other EMRs are now connected to Zeus on the front end. So you can have a Zeus screen inside your Elation, Salesforce, Canvas, Healthy, Epic, Athena. Yeah. Don't have Cerner yet. Just saying, we need to get Cerner soon. Maybe everything's perfect over in those Cerner sites. But that migration from automating the front end and calling that the medical record to keeping the automated front end, but actually pulling together the work of all the front ends into one single back end. That's where we are right now in the evolution of healthcare delivery, I think.
Yeah. So I was reading some of your blogs and, you know, whatever you've written so far and listened to a couple of your podcasts. And you've always said that, you know, healthcare needs to be more like the other industries, you know, faster, leaner, more customer centric. And do you think now with like AI and automation now reaching that maturing stage with, you know, like you said, agents and voice agents, do you finally think we are close to that inflection point? And do you think it's going to happen or is it still going to stay stuck in all these structural, you know, like we were talking about the fax machines? And
I think healthcare, think of energy. Like, are we going to do a lot more solar? Yes. Are we going to have no more coal? No. You know, we're just going to want more energy. So I imagine these, we'll live longer and longer. The hospitals will still be there. I mean, I hope a lot of them close. They're very high overhead. You get sick there. I mean, they're not modern medicine for much of what they do. Obviously, when there's a train wreck, you're really glad there's a multi-specialty hospital nearby. But a lot of these rural hospitals that are very emotional in our political conversation, you know, are honestly, statistically, they're kill zones. They shouldn't be doing a lot of what they're doing. Switching to virtual solutions here in my home state of Maine, we're very rural. And when people go to the doctor, they, I mean, aside from the fact that it's 5 weeks to get an appointment, it's 5 hours to get to the doctor's office for most of the farmers who are, you know, coming down. So the ability to switch to virtual first has a profound impact, not just on cost and quality, but on the larger economy. I think we are there, Ritu. I think we will be doing a lot more. And as these platforms like Zeus mature and you can do more and more things and more apps are built on them or at least built against them so that they work effortlessly with them, you'll see people invent more and more care models that incorporate that technology.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's been interesting to see this, you know, kind of shift in the healthcare mindset, because even up to last year, we were seeing that people were very resistant, only talking about, you know, pilots, maybe POCs, like approaching this very gingerly. But in the last year, I think we've seen this big shift where now everyone's like, it's here to stay.
Yeah.
It's more at every level. So, you know, what are we doing about this and how are we, you know, going to implement it at scale? So it sounds like Zeus is coming at a perfect time where...
You know, all the way we've been doing Zeus for, you know, we've been building it for almost for 5 years. We've been really selling it and installing it for 3 years. For the first 2 years, we had baling wire and bubble gum and straw. But we, you know, every day, one day I'd finish the day and go, oh, my God, I'm too early. And then another day I'd finish. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm too late. You know. Trying to convince our old friend Girish at Agilon, you know, no, I've already built it all myself. Oh, come on. You can't really want to build your own core medical record. But then deep insecurity, oh my God, I missed the window. And then you show up somewhere else and they're like, I had no idea this existed. So I, you know, maybe we got it just right by accident.
Awesome. That's good to know.
That's cool. Yeah, Ritu, I was going to ask Jonathan one question around what you were saying earlier about AI, Jonathan. So
yeah.
The landscape is changing so fast, as we all know. Like,
yeah,
it's amazing times where things are changing at much, much faster pace compared to before.
Yep.
How about, you know, legislation? Like, actually, the right word which I want to use is reimbursement. So, you know, we have all these new AI things which are coming along. How is reimbursement going to keep up? Because in the healthcare system, if AI is not going to be reimbursed, then a question actually rhetorically back to you is that, will the adoption be slow?
Obviously, when you have a highly, highly regulated safety net related industry, things are too slow. The nice thing about AI, like a lot of the stuff that Athena Health did back in the day, we didn't have AI at the time, but we had a lot of machine learning effort, is once you establish a manual process that fits inside of the regulatory framework, the opportunity to assign an agent chunks of that work on the inside without changing what you promised to be or do on the outside gives you a lot of flexibility to move quickly. So if you see the AI use cases in healthcare, you know, it's, hey, I'll do your coding for you. I'll read your records looking for risk adjustment opportunities. I'll do something that you had already given to someone else, but now I'll be the my agent, my artificially intelligent agent will be the someone else. We have customers like Firefly Health. You get a health plan, and with your health plan comes an online dedicated direct primary care doctor. And once you meet your doctor, you get handed to a nurse practitioner, you know, and then most of your traffic is with that nurse practitioner's guide. And after a while, the guide's answers are coming from an agent that knows what to say, so it doesn't waste the guide's time. And all of a sudden, you're getting real-time, always-on primary care, but most of it from an AI, even though there's a doctor sitting there behind it all who's accountable and to whom escalations will go. I think that's a model that allows for a lot of flexibility and innovation using AI without bumping into the air brakes that are the regulatory reimbursement regime.
Got it.
Yeah. Actually, that leads right into the next question, Jonathan, which is that, you know, the more we're talking about this digitization and the more data driven and we're putting everything into using AI and machine learning, how do you think the human touch comes back? Like, does it get more and more distant? Does it get more eroded? Or does it actually help with, you know, the doctor's time if he has everything in one place and he's able to look at everything and get...
I mean, that was a loaded question. You know, obviously, Today, doctors, there's a fair amount of benign neglect. Not that they don't care, not that they don't want to, but the amount of work it would take to actually pull together the whole picture of a patient so vastly exceeds the amount of economic time they have for that patient's encounter. It's just not worth it. So they give you a clipboard and they say, oh, I asked, you know, it's not my problem. And, you know, liability, I don't want to get a giant pile of data and then have to tease through the trash looking for the cancer that I didn't know about. And then I'm sued because it's in my record. So there's been a lot of innovation to, and by the way, it looks like a microcosm of all of society. I mean, think about it. What is AI? It's just an engine that summarizes the internet. It's read everything on the internet and it says, this is what I'm, and it says, hold on, I'll go, I've already read and modeled everything. Let me cook it down to likely what you want to see. Well, what does Zeus do? It goes and pulls together a complete view. You know, you pull a record together first time, one of your in-laws gets on Zeus, you know, there's going to be 2,000 fire resources from all these blood tests, and some of them matter and some of them don't, and some of them are related to this disease and some are related to a disease that's completely not a problem anymore. So the big deal of life on a common medical record is the lenses that sit on top, the summarizers. Is that a webhook engine that's looking for specific events to drive a follow-up? Is that a summarization lens? Is that an agentic AI kind of experience where, you know, a third year resident type briefing is given, you know, and it, and the resident briefing sounds different if the record could be the same, but the briefing given to an oncologist is completely different from the briefing given to an orthopedist on the same patient. It's just the parts of the chart that are important to each are different.
Totally different.
So the engine to summarize becomes as important. The enrichment and summarization is as important as the data aggregation itself. In fact, nobody wants the aggregated data if no one's going to summarize it for them reliably. And by the way, these agentic AI companies to spend 3 weeks doing an ETL project to integrate your artificial intelligent scribe, which can only look at whatever else has been written by that doctor about that patient. It's nice, you know, but what if the scribe actually didn't need 3 weeks of ETL to go live? And what if the scribe was actually looking at and writing against the entire chart? You know, did you know this person had a cancer diagnosis from last year? Do you want to ask about it? Here's the lab result I found. Bring that forward in the summarization. That's a mode of operating that is possible today when you include that summarization as part of the common patient record.
Yeah, that would really unlock the power of...
Yes, a big unlock is what that would be.
Yeah, big unlock.
Like our podcast.
You got it.
Yeah.
With that, Jonathan, tell us about the no hunting on Sunday.
No hunting on Sunday. The good news about Maine is we have a strong Native American tradition of land use. So we... Even though, you know, we're the private property regime in the United States, almost all of the land in northern Maine is unposted, meaning anybody can go on it. And that includes hunt on it. We have 6 million acres of working forest land and we have big preserves and, you know, wealthy families own huge estates and they don't post their land, meaning anybody can walk on it. Some of those families are scared to death that a hunter is going to shoot them by accident. And so they say, look, as long as you don't come on Sundays, I won't post my land. But there's a lot of big landowners who say, if you start hunting on Sundays, I'm not letting you hunt any days because then I'll have no days that are safe for me. And so all the hunters who really, I mean, most hunters, they get 2 days a week they can hunt, right? They can't leave work all day to hunt. And they've so half of them, they can only do Saturday. Mainers love to hunt and we need it because we otherwise get explosions of disease, deer and moose. But anyway, it's always a delicate walk, the common communal land use versus the freedom to hunt on your whole weekend. Maine's a beautiful state. It's purple. People call back. Yep. Even if they don't like each other, they still call back because the winters are long and lonely and you need everybody to call back. So I'm not sure what happens to the, it's been there for a long time, you know. I keep wondering, maybe there could be a coalition of the willing, you know, anybody not mind 2 days, you know, we'll create a special category. But right now we're happy with the 1 day.
That's cool. That's cool. And tell us a bit about, you said, mentioned early in the podcast about your running for governor.
Yeah.
Tell us a little
bit. Well, you know, I've had a great experience with the American dream. Started a company in my basement, went all the way to 6,500 people, 1,000 of them here in Maine. And it occurred to me that as we watch the economy, you know, concentrate into a small number of stocks and these debts pile up, that, and this kind of, what's the right word? Angerizing of the middle class of a lot of countries, not just ours, that those of us who know how the American dream works should spend some time making sure it works for others as well as ourselves. And so, you know, I've made a little money. I've had a lot of kids. I've been in the army. I've had all the adventures. I've had my own airplane. I've done everything
awesome
that I want to do. So maybe it's time to shut up and help other people do what they want to do.
Very cool. Very cool. So when will it be? Like when is it coming?
The election is in 1 year from now.
Okay.
Less than that. 11 and a half months from this moment.
Awesome. So nice to chat with you, Jonathan. Anything that you would like?
Oh, I'm thrilled to finally get my big moment on the big unlock. You guys have had an incredible run building a brand. I saw Chris was on your last episode. He's phenomenal. Island Dweller. He comes to Maine in the summer. So we got to get him to move the rest of his business to Maine, hopefully when I'm governor. But we watch from a distance and love your podcast at Zeus Health. And we're thrilled that we got included on it today.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. Yeah.
Take care, you guys.